QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater, 147.330 megahertz, offset of 600 kilohertz, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communication. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Hearing none, are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. Party. As far as announcements from the Tech Tuesday group, we will continue to let everybody know when we will start our antenna workshops this summer. And other than that, as it is right now, it's starting to warm up here in Big Bear, and then it gets cold again. So anyway, well, we'll see what we can do there. Topic for the evening is we will continue our discussion on mobile installations and use of mobile radios and all the problems thereof. So. Alrighty, I'll begin and call the roster. WB6CLZ, Mike, you out there?
Tom, we certainly are, and we're anxious to get into our topic tonight.
Okay, Mike, and is WB6CIN there also?
Hi, Tom. I'm ready to hear this topic.
Okay, Cindy, good deal. KA6CIA, George in Lucerne Valley. No George there. How about KE6RJ, Harry in Sugarloaf?
Good evening, Tom, and the net KE6RJ in Sugarloaf and KE6QI. Great topic. Thank you, Tom.
Hey, Harry. Hey, thanks for being out there, you and Nancy, and glad to have you back up here in Sugarloaf. AF6ZJ, Guy in Rosemont, are you out there this evening? And nothing heard. KI6SKN, Chris in Big Bear City. And nothing heard. KJ68CS, Mike in Fonskin.
Good evening, Tom and Annette. Give K6EKX a courtesy check-in. My dad, he called on the phone. He's listening on the scanner. So KJ6HCS back to net control.
Okay, Mike, we got him checked in here and you too there, so that's great. Glad to have him out there listening in. KJ6FIL, Mike in Redlands.
Hey, good evening, all. Definitely going to be listening, if I can. KJ6FIL.
Okay, Mike. Yeah, glad to have you out there checking in this evening. We have KF6VH. Bob, you out there? And I can hear it. How about KJ6KDL, Jim, at Sugarloaf?
KJ6KDL, Jim here with KJ6KDK Rosemary. Ears open wide.
Okay, Jim and Rosemary, glad to have you out there. And I know you probably had to find that big red button there. Anyway, let's see. How about GZI, Frank?
Good evening. This is W6GZI.
Okay, Frank, glad to have you out there listening in. Good deal there. How about KI6IQA Kelly? And nothing heard. How about K6GVL Ron in Green Valley? Okay, Ron, I think you're trying to check in there, but you're a little weak into the repeater. We'll check in, though. We're just barely breaking squelch there. 86PL, Harold. And nothing heard. We'll probably check in there a little bit later. K6LCS in Harupa Valley, Quint.
Oh, man, what an exciting 24 hours for ham radio. We'll talk about it in a few minutes. K6LCS.
Okay, Clint. Yeah, sounds like you got some really good stuff there for us. Appreciate that. W6AWL, Art.
Hey, Tom, we're sitting up here listening. As long as you keep me awake, that's what your job is. W6AWL, good evening.
Okay, Art. Well, we'll try not put everybody to sleep. We'll try to keep everything as interesting as we can. How about W6JLM? Judith, you out there?
Good evening, Tom. This is W6JLM, and we'll be listening.
All righty. Is W6KMM sitting right there next to you?
This is W6KMM, and I'll be listening also.
All right, Ken. Appreciate that. Glad to have you both out there. Let's see here. Don't know if I haven't heard this guy in a while, but we'll call him in one more time. KI6OHN, John, Big Bear City. And nothing heard there. And let's see, going down the list here. Just heard this guy out there, K6YNW, Chris.
Good evening, K6YNW.
Okay, Chris, sounded good out there tonight. Hitting the repeater really strong, and this is KF6Q on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater with Tech Tuesday. Every Tuesday, 1900 hours, conditions permitting. Moving down the list, W6KVC Gary. And I heard, how about KD6LAN? Bill, you out there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here like a leaf on a tree. 86, LAN, we're watching.
All right, Bill, glad to have you out there. And let's see here. How about K6HAL? Rudy, are you out there? And nothing heard. And let's see, maybe Ray, WB6PBZ? Listening in this evening, Ray. And I can heard. How about KJ6BCK, Adam from Garden Grove? He could be listening. Can't get to the mic. He's doing homework. AE6CK, Victor, Santa Fe Springs.
Good evening, Tom and Vanette. This is Alpha Echo 6, Charlie Kilo.
Okay, Victor, glad to have you with us again this evening. Appreciate that. KE6VHM, Frank, are you out there? And I heard, how about KA6ROD, Rod?
Good evening, everyone. KA6ROD.
Hey, Rod, glad to have you out there. Glad to have you back in town. Is KJ6DBS Leon, is he listening in? And nothing heard. How about KB6LTY, Christy? And nothing heard. AE6TV, comms. And nothing heard. Let's see here. Go down the list here. K6EK, KX Robert. Okay, we got him checked in. We got one more here. NQ7RD, Rick in Corona. Yeah, nothing heard. How about K6TUX? Gee, are you out there this evening? And nothing heard. That concludes the majority of the people that check in all the time. All righty. Well, Mike, WB60LZ, how is our DX sunspot activity out there?
Hey, Tom, this is WB6CLZ. I guess I better ID this time. Well, I hope somebody has better news than I have. It's been kind of dead out there. The bands haven't been doing much. I haven't been getting on 20 meters at night, but just talked to a gentleman up in Oregon, and he's telling me that he's been working Europeans and having a good time on 20 meters in the evening, but I haven't really had time to do that, so I cannot confirm that. Well, as of right now, Space Weather is reporting a sunspot number of 105, which is pretty good, but it's just not heating up the ionosphere and not doing what it has to do yet. So all reports, I sound like a broken record, all reports are that things are going to get better. Every prediction that I read keeps talking about things are getting better, but too slow for me. So anyway, that's about all I've got. I heard on 20 meters just before the net, station in Chile, but that's all I have to report. Let's hope somebody else has some better information. This is WB6CLZ back to net control.
86BL.
Okay, Mike, good deal there. 86BL, Harold, I knew you'd be out there. Are you checking in or do you have any DX stuff?
Just wanted to check in. I think when you called my name, somebody had come by to ask me about some stuff that's going on. And I was talking to them, had my volume down, so thought I'd better check in. 86BL.
Okay, Harold, when we don't hear you out there, then we get worried. It's almost time to get out search and rescue because you're here every time there. So, alrighty, anybody else out there with any DX information to add to that, please come back.
Hey, Tom, this is KI6OHE, Dave, checking in.
KI6OHE, Dave. Hey, Dave, how you doing? We mark you on the list here. Glad to have you with us.
I'm doing pretty good. I'm up in Big Bear City today. Went out fishing, but not a bite.
Well, that's because the fish are trying to DX out there. Their little radio's bobbing the lake. Sorry to hear that. I know some of the days it's been pretty nice out there, but glad to have you out there, and good deal. Appreciate that. Anyway, all right, got you on the list here, and we'll call you out here in the future. Anybody else out there with any DX information, been talking off of the local area on HF, please come back. Well, Mike, I think that's a good indicator that there isn't any DX. There's nobody coming back in there. But anyway, Mike, do you know, is this sunspot activity, is this just something that's perked up in the last few days? And, you know, we should probably be seeing something better in the next week, you think? WB6CLZ.
Well, they keep saying that, Tom. This is WB6CLZ. I know that we did have a geomagnetic storm over the weekend, a little corona hole in unison with a CME. And according to QRZ, that they saw 12 hours of a KP6 and 2 hours of a KP5, which is, kind of a disturbed situation. So, but everything I'm reading keeps saying it's going to get better, but we just haven't seen it yet, and I feel like a broken record here.
Well, you know what? That's you're not a broken record, and I know you were up here for a while and pretty busy over the weekend. With that plant sale and all that, so that's a good excuse right there. Well, anyway, so that'll pretty much wrap that up, and I think we have some very, very interesting stuff happening right now, and the guy is about ready to come out of his seat trying to tell us about this. K6LCS, Clint, with the, we'll call it the ham radio report, or the ham satellite report, and all or none of the above. Go ahead, Clint.
K6LCS, my wife accuses me of being a victim of AAHD, adult attention deficit syndrome. I've got four monitors happening, three audio feeds. This is an exciting night. We are recording as we speak episode number 2 of Ham Nation on the Leo LaPorte Twitch TV network, as well as other things happening with NASA. So let's get into this. Thank you, BBARC.org. BBARC.org for the repeater system, Drake. First off, if you're interested in the history of AMSAT satellites, there is a wonderful 103-slide PowerPoint on AMSAT.org. AMSAT, A-M-S-A-T, .org. Perry Klein, Dick Daniels, gives us the history of the Project Oscar and AMSAT, 103 slides, beginning with all the way back to Oscar 1. It is a wonderful presentation. That's AMSAT.org. Break. All right, number 2, twitch.tv/hn, twitch.tv/hn, Ham Nation. We are now, as we speak, recording the second episode of Ham Nation, the Bob Heil Ham Radio Show on Leo LaPorte's Twitch TV network. Tonight we're covering the Joplin emergency, and Leo's got Brian from Saturn and Gordo, our own Gordo, WD6MOA, working on it. A reminder for you, HF folks, 3920 is the Salvation Army team net for Joplin, 3920 at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Frequency is 3920. Break for a sec. URL for the broadcast, and this will be edited post-production and up tomorrow for you, is twit.tv/hn. Ham Radio, the original social network. Break for a sec. If you are a fan of the ISS, according to Roscosmos this morning, the ISS is going to alter its orbit. It's going to raise itself about 3.74 kilometers on Friday. This is going to affect your Keplerian element a little bit, about 70 seconds per day, until your source for Keplerian data catches up. So just know that you're going to be about 70 seconds off, and if you use AMSAT KEPS next Thursday, you'll be updated and ready to go. Remember, the crew works on GMT. So if you want to try a 2-meter contact with an astronaut, go to the schedule on NASA.gov, see when there's some free time, and watch their orbits, see when it's over us. Again, they're on GMT. Go to NASA.gov for some free time. Break for a sec. AO51 continues to be... Oh, it's like that lost love from high school. It is deteriorating. It has one battery that is at 0.0 volts, which we know is dead. So it is dying and needs software rebooted when it goes into the darkness. But it surprised the heck out of us this week. It came back 2 watts, like you're talking across the yard to it, and as recently as 4 hours ago was heard. So don't shy away from it. Keep that programmed. Don't give up on it yet. For the current info on its frequencies, I didn't print that out, but it's 435.150. 435.150 down, and go to worksat.com for the latest. work-sat.com. For the latest. Break for a sec. Tech Tuesday Tom. Are we doing okay? This is K6LCS.
Yeah, roger that, Quint. You're in here. He's real solid. Go ahead.
Thank you. Other machines, you can work FM. AO7 is exciting. UO11 for data only, for telemetry coming down. UO11 is back up and is exciting all of us with its being reset up and coming down to us really, really strongly. It's really exciting. ISS for data is coming down really strong. And, of course, SO50 is cool. Okay, another feed I've got coming in my left ear and on video is not only is NASA rolling out the shuttle STS-135 mission right now as we speak, but they just finished a news conference with those astronauts, and then tonight at 11:35 our time, 11:35 p.m. our time, STS-134 with Mark Kelly on board is expected to land on time at the Kennedy Space Center. It's 11:35 tonight. Go to nasa.gov, and watch the live video. Horribly exciting stuff. Break for a sec. Yeah, you think there aren't public relations people with NASA? Yeah, as STS-135 is being rolled out to its launch pad, STS-134 is landing. It's just a wonderful video going to happen this evening for us. The STS-135 crew, the Atlantis crew, just finished their pre-flight press conference. The four of them standing in front of the backdrop of Atlantis being rolled out in darkness behind them. Oh, awesome stuff. Awesome stuff. Sorry, at my age, it just brings tears to your eyes. It's incredible stuff. Let's see, we talked about the reboost of ISS. Check Tuesday Tom. That's all I've got. There's a basketball game on. Who cares? K6LCS. Thanks for the time, and thanks to BBARC.org.
Okay, Clint. Yeah, any questions out there real quick? I appreciate that, Clint. We'll just see if there's any questions. Please come back. KF6Q. All right, hearing none, but we're always open for questions and suggestions as we go through the net. And, Clint, appreciate all that good information. Pretty exciting what Leo LaPorte's doing out there. He's always been in the top niche there of computer science, computer techies, us and the geeks. And essentially he's becoming a ham, and he's got with Gordo and everybody else there. It's pretty cool stuff. This is a big boost for ham radio. And anyway, in the near future here, we don't have a definite start date, though. We will be expanding after the HAMSAT report, ISS, with Clint. We'll be doing a one-item-per-week coverage on some of the software out there for programming radios, what's available, and a little section just briefly on computer control radios, and all the sort of stuff like that is coming out. So looking forward to starting that in the next few weeks, hopefully. So, all right, well, let's see. Back to the topic we were going to continue on, which was ham radio mobile installation. And do have a gentleman out there. We'll check and see if he's out there. K6RBK, are you listening in this evening?
Good evening, Tom. Yeah, I'm out here. Not sure how long I'll be able to stay around, but I am listening, and we'll be here for a bit. K6RBK, back to net control.
Okay, Rob was in there last week, and just to bring everybody up to date, was having some issues with two of his vehicles, having a lot of alternator noise, and I think you still have a problem with one, which is probably going to be the battery, I think you said. But would you like to summarize real quick and just how you found out the problem, what you actually went through before you found the solution. Pretty interesting. We all have noise in the radio from time to time, but, I think there's a few out there that got pretty lucky. Jim was one. Rob, you want to just take it from the top there and let us know where it started and where you ended up. K6RBK, KF6Q.
And what happened was this was a new radio and a new vehicle, or somewhat new vehicle, and it was the second one of this particular radio that I have, also in another vehicle with the same problem. And I assumed that maybe the first one was a fluke, and what happened in the second vehicle, I started digging in a little deeper to try to figure out what it was. And this particular radio was connected using the factory supplied power cables directly to the battery, which is always recommended. And the wires were routed away from, the larger noise sources, like the alternator and the ECU, and still had this problem. So what we ended up trying first was, and this falls into the domain of sort of skipping the simple things first, which would have been to consult the manufacturer's guide, which most manufacturers publish, of vehicles, about how to put a two-way radio in their particular vehicle. And so the first thing I tried was adding a large capacitor at the radio to supplement the internal capacitor in the radio that sort of filters the DC input. And it made a difference, but the problem was, in order to get it close enough to the radio to have an effect, it would have had to been sort of hanging out in the passenger footwell. And so once it was put on leads long enough to get back into an area where it could be concealed and out of the way, it wasn't really making much of an effect. I'm going to go ahead and reset here for just a second. So the next step was to look at the schematics for the radio and compare it to some other radios that I had tried in this vehicle that did not have the problem. And it turned out that the filtering circuits were nearly the same as the other radios, which really sort of increased the mystery. In fact, one radio that we tried in the vehicle that did not have the problem had actually less DC filtering. So at this point, I was a little frustrated and ended up sort of going back and starting at step one and reading the vehicle's, the manufacturer's guide to installing a two-way radio in the vehicle. And one of their recommendations was to closely twist the positive and negative leads supplying DC to the radio as tightly as possible. And the effect there is that it cancels the common mode interference that turns out was getting onto the DC lines and causing the noise we were hearing in the radio. And what we believe that to be is the alternator was not putting out AC onto the DC line, causing that problem, which was easy to suspect because it had the typical signs of alternator noise, which was a whine that varied with engine speed. So what we suspect it was in fact the alternator was generating RF, which was being picked up by the power leads until they were twisted tightly together to sort of cancel that interference. And as Tom mentioned, there was a second vehicle with the same problem, and twisting the power leads did not help. And it turns out that battery in that vehicle is going faulty, so it's not acting. It doesn't have the same capacitive effect to filter DC, to filter AC from the alternator that it should. So we suspect replacing the battery will solve the problem in that case. Back to you, Tom. K6RBK.
Yeah, Rob, and I think that's one thing there, like you said, that consulting the owners or the vehicle manufacturer probably would have saved a lot of steps there. A lot of times we all do that. We jump out there and pretty much think we know the solution to the problem, and then when it doesn't solve that, it becomes a puzzle that just grows with more pieces and more pieces and things like that. So what Rob, I guess you were saying, is that twisting the positive and negative into a spiral, instead of just running them, just bunched together, with that spiral twist, that actually, what that does, it's forming a type of transmission line. It's the same as computer network cabling, is the same thing is done, and for the same reason, is to eliminate what we call common mode noise. The alternator with the brushes was literally generating RF the old-fashioned way, the old spark gap way, and following the engine whine, and basically underneath the hood, There was all kinds of RF noise there. Rob, actually, you did some experiments with a battery, and you were outside of the hood area, and it went away. So you were, that was confusing too, correct?
Correct. In the course of testing, we, in fact, tried different radios in the same vehicle connected to the same RF and same DC connections present in the vehicle, and those particular radios, for reasons still unknown to me, did not exhibit the problem. And one of those radios that I mentioned, in fact, had less noise filtering on the DC input. So besides trying different radios in the same vehicle, another thing we did was to supply power to the radio externally. And I didn't have an extra gel cell handy. So what we did was, in fact, just parked another vehicle that was not running next to the vehicle in question, and just ran the power directly from that battery, and kept the car running. In fact, the car that was, you know, had the noise, in fact, was running, and we didn't experience the problem. So there were some variables there and some observations that were very, very counterintuitive in getting us to the solution. There were certainly a lot of things we encountered that just did not point to what the problem actually was.
You know, that's pretty typical when we're trying to, you know, resolve a problem, is that there could be more than one thing happening, multiple things that are causing a problem, or something that's causing it that's eluding us, that maybe is obvious, but not at that point in time. And I think that with that RF noise actually being trapped under the hood of the one vehicle running and running power from the other one, it was kind of showing part of the solution there, but it was still not real obvious. So anyway, that's one good thing to think about, one good way to get rid of it. And I don't know if anybody else has ever had to do that. I know that Jim, real quick there, Jim, KJ6KDL, you've installed your radios. I know Rob, I think you said you had the 1900. If I'm not mistaken, Jim, I'm not sure which one you have. Did you have any issues at all with noise, Jim, just real quick?
I did not have that noise problem with the antennas mounted in the back and running the cables. I went through and instead of using the factory wiring, which on the FT2900 looks like 14-gauge wire, I went out and bought one of those high-end stereo mod kits with 8-gauge wire and ran that along the fender well, found a pass-through through the passenger door area, and ran along the floorboard and stayed away from the center of the car. So I basically stayed away from the electrical firing section of the engine from both the AC, from the DC input power to the radio and from the antenna, which some people will have a similar effect if they mount the antenna on the front, which I've seen. They get too close to the engine, they can get spark noise in the reception part of their antenna.
Okay, Roger that. Yeah, it is kind of critical where you run the wires and staying away from all this stuff, especially all the electronic stuff that's under the hood these days. They're all going to generate a little bit of RF noise of one sort or another. And staying away, physically away from it, is step one. Step two, twist the wires so that that common mode noise will tend. What it tends to do is each wire is acting as an antenna and bringing this in through the DC input side. And by twisting them and actually forming a typical transmission line like it does, each line receives exactly the same signal at the same time, effectively canceling each other out. You'd have to have, like a dipole antenna we have up in the air, well, they have to be separated. If those two wires were twisted together, it would never work for the same reason. Twin lead line essentially does not radiate or get in the way because of the same reason. It's close enough and uniform enough to cancel any common mode stuff out, so. Anyway, all right, anybody else out there with any interesting problems or solutions in installing a mobile rig, please come back. It's KF6Q with Tech Tuesday.
LAN.
Yeah? Yeah, two people in there. First one is KD6LAN, then we'll get to the second one right after that. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, I got a comment and a question at the same time. In the old days, I had that same problem when we were running generators rather than alternators, and you always picked up that generator whine. And we found a real easy fix was to use coax for a power source instead of running two separate wires, a black and a red or black and a white or whatever. We literally ran coax, and it seemed to shield it. Now, the question part is that advisable?
Yeah, KF6Q here on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater, Tech Tuesday, 1900 hours every Tuesday. Well, I'd say that you can, depending on the coax. Some coax, the middle conductor, I think with RG58, and I could be corrected if I'm wrong here, but I do believe the center conductor is about 20-gauge wire. Now, a 20-gauge wire will hold quite a bit of current. I wouldn't want to power up 100-watt mobile with it. Possibly 50 watts. Yeah, you're going to be running 6, 7 amps through there. It's doable. You can definitely tell if it gets warm. If it was heavier wire, it would definitely be better, something at least a 16-gauge. And, of course, what you'd want to do, the best thing to do, is run two pieces of coax. Mark them separate. Have one as the plus and one as the minus. The shields, ground them to the frame. Use the center conductors only, and then both the plus and the minus are both shielded completely from the RF. But, yeah, that, I'd have to be careful with that. You know, like I said, it best test is first run it and see if it gets hot. Physically touch it. So, but I don't think 20 gauge is. I forget what the rating is. I don't know if somebody else out there has that. But anything else there, Bill?
No, that was just kind of a comment and a question. I did it once when I first got into ham, and it seemed to work. But I had the radio in a generator environment rather than an alternator, and it just seems that no matter what I did, you know, even moving the antenna to the rear of the car didn't seem to help. And then some guy told me about this, and that's what I did. So I just was kind of wondering. That's all. KD6LAN.
Okay, Bill. Appreciate that. And we have somebody else out there. Please come back.
Oh, it was LCS.
Oh, Clint, go ahead. Glad to have you out there. And what's the question or comment?
All the American manufacturers of vehicles have data sheets on how to install high-power VHF, UHF equipment in their cars. Now, you go to your service manager at your local dealership and ask them for that information, and they'll give you a quizzical look and not know what you're talking about. You ask to please get the info for the district manager, and he or she will know how to get you that PDF file of how law enforcement, undercover, how folks are installing 50-watt radios in each respective model of car. Ford, GM have these data sheets for us. You can't find them on the Internet very easily, but the information is there because they are required to supply that information to folks who are buying their cars for public service work.
Okay, Quint, I appreciate that. That's good information. And I don't know if RBK, are you still out there real quick? Did you find that information online?
KS6Q, KS6RBK. Yes, and that was actually one of the things I wanted to recommend last week, and it sort of followed WB6CLZ's comment about
do what I say and not what I do, which is exactly what happened to me in this instance, was if you search, you can typically find a guide published by the manufacturer of a vehicle. They're typically a little bit of Googling around. You'll find them either on the manufacturer's website, usually not directly. Usually you'll have to search for it. Or I found them, depending on what I was looking for, sometimes hosted on someone else's website. But they are out there, and they're not always not always vehicle specific. I found in some cases they're sort of a general overview of good practices for that, you know, that particular manufacturer recommends. And then in some instances they will be vehicle or even model specific. But they are out there if you just search around.
Okay, roger that. Well, there's two different ways there. One, if you have a computer and the knack of doing searches, and another, like Clint said, if you don't have internet or a computer, and there are a lot of people still out there with that circumstance, and basically going to a dealership, a good chance you'll find what you need there too. So, and I'd imagine too that through a lot of the possibly Saturn, possibly some of these other groups would have some literature like that. I don't know if that's on our ECS site, but if it's not, it might be something that we're going to add in the future, and we'll talk to them about that. So, all righty. Anybody else out there with any comments or suggestions or questions?
D6PL.
86PL. Harold, go ahead.
Yeah, I picked this up. I haven't tried it. Picked it up out of Don Johnson, the inventor of the screwdriver antennas, book on HF mobile. And for HF, he recommends to kill the noise on your power line that it picks up like a little antenna, to use a 1-inch form, which would be 3/4-inch schedule 40 PVC would be ideal. This is for HF now, wrap 7 or 8 turns, he said, not more than 8 turns of your power line side by side, orderly manner on that, and secure it as close as you can get to the plug, so you can still plug it in, but it's right up against the radio, as close as it's feasible there, and supposedly that chokes out the incoming noise on your power line, and I would think that somebody with an electronics background could probably figure it out for VHF and UHF, 86PL.
Okay, roger that. Actually, you know, Harold, with VHF or UHF, because we're really looking at the alternator wind, which that frequency is not changing, and the DC is not changing, so it would probably apply to just about any band. Because we're not actually trying to get rid of our VHF signal. We're just getting rid of that stupid alternator signal, which is whatever it is, frequency. And, I think there with that wire, with a basically wound like a choke ballon, we do for similar reasons or similar purpose, but different, same thing, different reason. How's that sound? But it's choking that out. And, of course, then, too, being side by side also helps to eliminate that common mode signal that way, too. So it's got a double whammy on that thing there, one by choking it out, the other also by common mode rejection. Probably works pretty good. And, Rob, if you're still listening, you might try that. Harold, do you remember how many turns, or did he say?
He said not more than 8. I said 7 or 8, and not more than 8. So if you wrap more than 8, why, then you defeat the purpose of the choke.
Okay, roger that. Myself, I don't know why, but let's just follow his instructions and do that. And I guess that would be one thing to try. And maybe Rob can try that and report back to us next week, see what happens. So, well, good deal. Appreciate that, Harold. That's good information. And love to hear that stuff. There's a lot of stuff out there. I'm sure there's tons of things. But anyway, let's see if we get anybody else out there. Any questions or suggestions or thoughts of the day as far as what you've done in the past for your own radio?
GZI.
CIA.
CLZ.
And we have the Big Bay Amateur Radio Club repeater in there, too. KF6Q here, Tech Tuesday, every Tuesday, 1900 hours. Let's start with GZI, and then we'll go to the other two. Yes, go ahead, Frank.
It's the little powdered iron clamp-on things that they use on the computers. Every computer add-on has got those things, and sometimes you can get them off. But you can buy them at Radio Shack, too, and they're a useful tool. You can clamp them on and try them pretty easy. And if it doesn't work, put them somewhere else, over.
You know, that's a good thought there, because if you're out yard sailing, and you'll find a lot of stuff out there, sometimes for free. And, yeah, a lot of those cables, they're on old printer cables. They're very salvageable from other things. I know Rob tried some ferrite, but I don't think he charged. You know, the size of the ferrite is very important. The larger it is, the more, I forget the actual term of that inductance field that it forms, and the more powerful it's going to be to reject that. Very good point there, Frank. Appreciate that. Then to CIA. Go ahead, George.
Good evening. Check me in, too, as long as you're there. Anyway, I was just going to comment on what Bill said about the coax. Yeah, I've done that in several cars, only I used the RG8, and that was about the equivalent of a number 14 wire. So it would carry about 15 amps, which, like 100 watts, so run around 8 or 9 amps. So it worked pretty good, and it did shield pretty well. And the other thing I just wanted to mention, that you guys out there are running your power lines, and especially if you're going from the front of the car clear to the back and so on to get to the battery, is there's quite a voltage drop on 12 volts. So if you got to go over about 6 foot, you ought to start thinking about doubling the size of the wire, or at least going to the next size larger so you'll carry the load. Otherwise, the lower the voltage, the higher the amperage, and your wires start getting hot. That's about it. K6CIA.
Good point there, George. And yeah, we'll expand on that a little bit. I have another little thought on that. But first, back to CLZ. Go ahead.
Okay, Tom, I'm kind of playing around here on the computer while I'm listening in the other ear, and on the Diamond Antenna site for HF mobile installation tips. I've never heard this one before. They say if you have ignition noise problems, it's also recommended to ground the end of your tailpipe to the frame. And to qualify that, they've taken the reference they use is the ARRL radio frequency interference tips, how to find it, fix it. That's what I've never heard before, but very interesting. They also mention grounding the body and the frame to your antenna system using 1 to 3 inch copper strap or preferably braid. Also found that very interesting. The WB6CLZ, back to you, Tom.
Yeah, RFI is really a huge topic in itself, and that's generally one of the major things in a mobile rig, as you know, we have all these other signals coming in. Here's another thought, too, and as we're talking about coax, and George suggested RG8, which is probably good with a good hefty center conductor, if you were not worried about that much of a load and you're not going that far, I just want to point out that we don't need 50-ohm coax. If you got some old 59-ohm cable TV stuff kicking around or something like that, what you just want to be careful of is that the center conductor of whatever you use is adequate. If you have a lot and you've got some little red tape and black tape, you can actually parallel a couple for the negative and parallel a couple more for the positive. And then just make sure you combine them properly. You'll definitely know if you don't right away. And you can parallel the two wires and increase your current capacity that way, too, so, which is kind of another thing that George kind of touched on there, too. So a lot of good stuff there, a lot of different ways to do it, and a lot of information out there. So anyway, anybody else with any thoughts, questions, or suggestions, please come back, KF6Q.
Yeah,
GZI again.
Yeah, I had GZI and I think somebody right after that. Go ahead, Frank.
Well, you can take RG8U and very carefully slice off the outside the plastic cover. And when you get that off, you can push the shielding together, and it increases in size quite a bit. And when you do that, you slide it off, and you take number 8 wire or whatever size you want, and put it on there and pull it down, and you have shielded wire. Over.
Yeah, roger that. You know, I was thinking about that, honestly. And that you have to be a little crafty, got to be clever. Yes, yes, it's kind of like that little Chinese little torture trick with your finger torture trick or whatever. It'll do that, and that's a lot of ways that some people will modify coax as an antenna. It's that's another topic, another night. Good thoughts there. Yes, you can create your own shielded wire that way, and who knows, maybe even with some smaller, if you can get the... pretty a little harder to do with RG58 and RG59, but yeah, RG8's a lot bigger and probably easier to work with. So good thought there. Appreciate that, Frank. Good topic there. And there was somebody else in there. Go ahead.
86PL.
Yeah, 86PL. Go ahead, Harold.
Yeah, Tom, it's a little bit change of subject here, but it's not necessarily just when you're installing, but... if you do like I usually do, you'll blow the fuses in the inline holders, at least one of them, and you'll have to replace them. And most people never think. They just grab a fuse. And if you don't put a fast blow in there, you could turn your radio into a fuse. You let all that smoke that they packed in and in the factory out. So it's... before you start messing with radio, or if you buy a used one, check to make sure somebody else hasn't blown a fuse and just grabbed a standard automotive fuse and stuck in it. And because I fried a radio one day, but that's how I remember that so well. It wasn't a good radio, and it wasn't a very expensive one, but I did let the smoke out of it. So you... do best if you look in the manual. If you don't have the manual, check with the manufacturer and find out what the fuses are and make sure you have fast blow, not standard. And those you'll have to get probably Radio Shack, Electronic Warehouse, somewhere like that, 86PL.
Oh, very on topic, actually, there, Harold, because that is a very important thing. Yes, and that's something that I don't think we even discussed last week. Now we have this week that slow blow fuses definitely could fry the radio. So good point there. Anybody else out there? Any other questions or topics or suggestions or things they've had to work around putting the radio in? Please come back.
Romeo Juliet.
Romeo Juliet there. Hey, Harry, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. K6RG. I am a firm believer in ferrite cores, and I have a couple of snap-ons that I have on my power in closest to the radio. And I don't need it in this one here, but I had it in the Honda, and that took care of the ignition noise.
Oh, okay, Harry. So just putting that ferrite snap-on got rid of the noise? Is that what I hear there? That sounds pretty good.
Roger.
All right. Well, and like I said once before, that the size of the ferrite core is very important. Size here does matter. The larger the core, the more it's going to impede, the signals out there, and actually the ones that we see as salvaged, or you can buy them on a lot of the, say, extinct or old boxes of computer cables are perfect for that because that's exactly what they're designed to do. So fantastic. Good deal there, Harry. Glad you could share that with us. Anybody else out there with something to share, please come back to KF6Q.
Hey, Tom, W6AWL.
Yeah, Art, go ahead.
Okay, got a question for you to come check. You know, I got three vehicles. I got Kenwood's, and I got a Yaesu in a plastic car. Go down the street here in Sugarloaf, make the turn, and sit right between the post office and Easy's, and it breaks the squelch on all my radios for no good reason. Got any ideas?
I do. Here.
Okay, yeah, let's go with somebody else who has it, and I also have it, but go ahead.
L.A.N.
Ah, L.A.N., go ahead.
More than likely, it's going to be the satellite dish for the lottery system at Easy's. I had the same problem when I had the store down here in Boulder Bay. And it depends on where you're at. If you get in line with that satellite dish or just in one spot with that satellite dish, it just wreaks havoc. KD6LAN. That's just a thought, just an idea. But that's what I found it out to be at my place.
Okay, and to add to that, notice this around Sugarloaf, don't know about other places, there is a whole lot of noise coming off of Charter's cables, enough to break squelch on a 2-meter radio. And it does it to, it's not just from any computers nearby, it's just directly off the lines. I know WO6B and myself found this just walking around with portables. Certain areas, and it's noise coming out of different locations. I know they have a lot of filters, but sometimes the filters are off, and it's really strange. And I know at the post office itself, whatever they're running in there, I know that Obi shuts down his radio in there because he can't hear anything in there. So Art, it's a combination of all of that. Not a mystery. It's just all that other equipment. Back to you, Art.
Okay, all sounds great. That's, it's not a mystery. It's just it's a specific thing on that one corner, and it happens on every one of my mobile radios as they go around the corner. So everybody be aware that those things are out there between the post office and Easy sending lottery, but they're not sending the right lottery numbers to me, so it's not working. Okay, Tom, have a great one. Thank you much. W6AWL.
That is why it's causing interference. It's the wrong number. So, yeah, I've actually taken and shut down all of my computers here at the house. I have actually shut off the router, the wireless router, disconnected the coax. It's nothing but the coax coming from the pole to the house and going nowhere from that point. And I have got so much noise right there if I'm right underneath it. If I get away from it a little bit, it tends to go away. So, but, yeah, typically, and you will get noise off of computers, too, and laptops. If I'm not mistaken, I think Bill, W6BBL, traced a huge interference problem he could not locate, found out, I believe, it was coming from his laptop or the power supply to his laptop. So, yeah, you just never know what's going to happen with that stuff, so. Anyway, anybody else out there, questions, thoughts, suggestions, or problems you run into, please come back, KF6Q.
AG6PL, yeah.
And this WB6CLZ.
Okay, in that order, Harold first, then Mike, 86PL.
Yeah, I just was sitting here looking at my radio. Since I changed my battery, I haven't had anybody check it when the engine's running, but I have probably one of the noisiest setups for engine noise that you can have. An old six-cylinder copy, Japanese copy of GMC's 1939 truck engine. And I've never had anybody tell me that I had noise off the engine. I've had people check it deliberately when I'd be talking to them. And I just realized that my radio is about 27 to 30 inches above the engine level. So that might help you a little bit, too. If you can get your radio above your engine level, you might get it out of the radiation field, at least part of it, 86 field.
Yeah, good point there, Harold. Yeah, there's a lot of, and I think just like RBK had, was actually with the hood shut, trapping a lot of the RF in there, and it's because of the fact that it's surrounded by metal. And, you know, a lot of times we don't think in those terms, but of course that, we'll get into that. As we have not yet done our EMP stuff, we're going to wait until we get into the at the same time we do the lightning strike, lightning protection stuff. So, anyway, yes, CLZ, go ahead.
One thing I don't think's been mentioned, Tom, is when you're selecting your coax for a mobile installation, stranded center conductor, very important. Use a solid center conductor, and there is a likelihood, since it's moving around and stressing all the time, eventually you're going to have an issue with that. So I always prefer stranded center conductor over a solid conductor. WB6CLZ, back to net control.
Yeah, roger that. Yeah, that's a good point there, too. And, as we, you know, like I said, it's, you got to think a little bit different in mobile installation. There's a lot of different things. You don't want to run any solid wire, of course, even for your power lines for the same reason. And, you know, that's all. Now, one thing we have not talked about, what we just dabbled, it was suggested by Kelly, IQA, last Tuesday, was Anderson Power Poles. And your very neat modular system. They can be grouped together in 2, 4, 6, 8 different sets. You can actually do, they're like Legos. They snap together, and you can polarize them that way. Pretty neat stuff. My suggestion is this. Whatever you set up for Anderson power poles, have a set of Anderson power poles just with bare wires coming out. Because you never know. You're going to have that situation, or maybe a couple of them, where you're going to have to actually field rig something. You know, if something happens. I know I've actually seen a power pole fail, connection was bad, and the best correction for that was a pair of dikes to cut it and strip it bare. But anyway, yeah, and there's a lot of other things, too, other connectors. Try to get a variety. Try to do what you can, you know, collect these things, and, you know, so you have a selection. Keep it in your little go box. Keep it with you. Anybody else out there with any other comments, suggestions, or questions on this stuff? Please come back.
W6AWO.
Yeah, KF6Q here, Check Tuesday on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. Yes, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I missed all of that, and we need to do that on the Anderson power poles. Anderson power poles are an important part of putting it together. They are the standard power connections for emergency communications. Get them set up, whatever connections you have on your radios. Make sure you've got a matched pair of Andersons. If we get out there and we're called on for emergency communications, that is the standard that we use to connect.
Roger that. And Art, I think Kelly, KI6IQA, had mentioned last Tuesday that, you know, with, you say us, that's with ECS, CERT, I know the Salvation Army, Red Cross, everybody. I believe everybody, when you say us, I think that it's everybody uses that. So it's good to have. If you've got to grab a radio and set it up, you know, for emergency use someplace, that's the way to go. So anything to add, Art? Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a number of ways to do it, and I've made up different adapters. As long as the Andersons are on the end, you can use the factory connectors on the other end. Any combination thereof, so that if you call out into service and for emergency use, the Andersons are the standard. So just have them on the other end. You can plug into everything we got. you know, that's what I believe in. That's what I'm here for, Tom. Thank you so much. W6AWO.
Yeah, Art, and I think it was Harry, KE6RJ, and possibly somebody else also, had Anderson's made up as a Y, basically splitting out from one set to a pair. You know, this is perfectly fine, especially if you start out with a higher amp rating, Anderson, and split it off. If you're going to do some of this stuff and make it up in advance, think moisture, think protection on this stuff. Any crimp or solder connections you make, make sure you get some heat shrink tubing on that. A couple layers doesn't hurt. You know, to get that stuff all protected and seal it weather tight, you know, that works really good for most purposes and, you know, of course, can be cut back off if necessary. So, anyway, yeah, that's a good topic there. A good thing in itself just to keep in mind. So, anybody else out there with any other topics, questions or suggestions for mobile installations and a power setup, antenna setup, you name it. Please come back, KF6Q.
Seems quiet, Tom, W6AWO.
Bart, I think we've got it covered. Covered a lot of topics tonight on that. And in the future, of course, we always repeat these things down the line a little bit, so, and add to them. So anyway, pretty much got it covered. Mike, in closing, anything left to add? WB6 seals it.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot to add, but nothing coming out of this brain tonight. Very good topic. Very, very good Tech Tuesday tonight. We're waiting for next Tuesday. WB6 seals it. Back to you, Tom.
Yeah, Mike, as always, we try to keep something interesting out there, something practical, and then once in a while sneak in something education. I mean, something to perk up our intelligence and IQ level there of radio work. So a lot of fun. I do appreciate everybody being out there. Anybody in closing have anything last to add?
IQA.
Kelly, IQA, go ahead.
Sorry, got tangled up in something and just turned it on about 5 minutes ago. But at your next workshop, or I'll drag myself to the next meeting and bring that Anderson crimp tool and some Anderson connectors. And after you see the way the crimp works and the ease and simplicity of building up an Anderson end for your power leads on everything, I think 90% of us will all become believers. They're slick. So just give me a reminder. KI6IQA.
Okay, Kelly, appreciate that. Yeah, we covered quite a bit there on the Andersons a little while back, just actually in the last probably 15, 20 minutes, and just reiterating what you had started, excuse me, last Tuesday. Little note there on the crimping tool, a couple thoughts about that. Number one, can you solder these Anderson connectors to your wire? The answer is yes. Can you crimp them? The answer is yes. Which is the best? Well, for mobile installation, and we're talking about mobile, when you solder stuff, it's definitely soldered. Problem is where the solder stops and the, you know, multi-strand begins, tends to work that very sharp point there, and the next thing you know, it snaps off. So I would recommend, as many do, if the only way to do it would be to crimp them. By crimping them, it's still a good electrical connection. You still get that little bit of freedom where it's not focusing all that stress onto one spot. So I just thought I'd add that in there. Anyway, anybody else in closing, anything else to add? KF6Q, please come back.
LCS, I will be quick, honest.
Oh, not a problem there, Clint. You know what? If we had to worry about the 8 o'clock thing there, it's not an issue. There's no net after ours, so go ahead.
So I have power pulled some AC wall warts that charge some HTs.
because you might be in a situation where you need that 5-volt or 12-volt DC from another source. So I've got a couple of FT60 wall warts that have power poles. What you need to do with them, though, when you crimp them is strip, you know, like a little over an inch, maybe an inch and a quarter, pulls it back on itself as you insert it into your crimp tool. But, yeah, power poles are wonderful. And that's it. Case of health, yes.
Oh, good point there. Now, before you go away, now when by folding the wire back on itself, does that seem to lock that in better?
If some of that really light cable used for wall warts just is not, that's not enough mass to grip on the medium-sized power poles. So I pulled back at least three times normal size. And, we have power pole parties down here. If anybody's in the Harupa Valley area and needs some stuff power poles, just please call me. Call me before June 5. That's my wife's coming back home. But we can have a little power pole party at the house, at your house, and get your stuff up to power pole stuff. K6LCS.
And remember that June 5th date. After that, all bets are off, right, Clint? Okay. And I think there's a couple people up here in our club that do have some crimpers. It's a good tool. It's not a cheap tool. It's great if you have somebody out there that's got one. If not, you know, that can be purchased too. And it's not a tool that you'll ever regret buying. So, especially if you do set up a lot of stuff and equipment. So, all right. Well, another last call. Anybody else, anything in closing to add? Please come back, KF6Q.
One more thing, and then I'll get out of here, too.
Oh, not a problem there, Mike. And Art, if you're listening, this is, see, just if we let it go quiet for a little bit, it perks right back up. Go ahead, Mike.
Real quick things. I said one, but it's two. I've got, you don't need the Anderson crimpers. I've got a pair of channel lock crimpers, and I'm sure the Kleins will, too. If you get the right size here, it looks like it's going to work perfectly on the 30-amp power poles. So I'm not really sure you have to buy the power pole crimpers themselves. But, you know, maybe we could combine a power pole party with one of our antenna seminars. Let's think about that and talk about that at length. Maybe we'll get that going. That might be a good thing to do. Okay, well, we're out of here. I've got other things I've got to do, so I'm going to say 7-3s to everybody and look for everybody next week. WB6CLZ, we'll be clear.
KF6Q, Tech Tuesday on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 1900 hours every Tuesday that we can. And Mike, if it's after the 5th, then we'll invite Clint up here. You know, so that'll be great. Maybe you'll do a satellite demo at the same time. All right, let's see. Anybody else in closing? Any other comments or questions? We've got time. Please come back.
Good evening, comment. Tom, W6AWO.
All right, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, all of what you're doing and the Tuesday is just super. Everything that you do and work out there, I agree with. Anderson Power Poles, that's, another subject here, but that is our standard for emergency communications so that everybody runs out there and says, well, what do I plug it into? Well, Anderson's is what we use. That's all of RACES, that's all of ECS, that's everything that we have in all of our groups. And thank you so much for being out there and being a part of this and putting it together. I'm going to go find me some water in a rain locker, and thank you much, Tom. W6AWO.
Okay, Art, glad you could join us, and appreciate that, yeah. And don't forget, next Tuesday, see you out there. Anybody else out there? Any other final comments or suggestions or questions or whatever? Please come back.
KC6UIX.
KC6UIX. Oh, my gosh. He wandered over on 2 meters. Hey, Greg, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm using a handheld to open works. The Anderson.
says they're okay. Just don't leave them sitting on the floor of the car, because they step on them, they don't work anymore. Anyway, let's let you guys know the field day's on the way, so that meeting is also on the 25th. It's Saturday night instead of whatever it's supposed to be, Friday night. But anyway, anybody got any ideas for that, get a hold of me. Give me a call on HF or send me an email. Alrighty, Tom, that's about it. Listen to the PowerPoint thing. Yeah, like Mike says, I use a pair of real Klein grippers for those things, and they work fine, but you don't solder nothing on anything that moves. Airplanes, cars, boats, etc. Anyway, you guys have fun. Take it easy, Tom. KC6UIA.
Okay, Greg, KF6Q here. And you know what, Greg? I think the Tuesday before field day, we'll dedicate that Tuesday, Tech Tuesday, an hour plus of after we do our normal little check-ins and stuff, on our field day up here, Big Bear. Any other, you know, last-minute things or suggestions or things to work out for field day, we'll reserve that hour. How's that sound?
Yeah, that should be okay. Take a look at that. I think we've got pretty well everything handled. Somebody might come up with a better idea, which would be an improvement. All right, Tom. Yeah, that sounds like fun. Yeah, we'll catch you guys later. KC6UIX.
Okay, Greg. Appreciate that. Thanks for stopping by. And any Tuesday, drop on in. Love to have somebody from the HF group, as we call it, especially in our DX report, see what's been going on out there. All righty, anybody else out there, any final comments or suggestions or whatever dealing with our topic tonight, or even a little bit off topic? Go ahead. All right, hearing none, I think. All righty, close the net, and I do appreciate everybody joining in tonight, all the comments, suggestions, and ideas. Great stuff. We'll try to keep good stuff coming down the road, and like I say, we've been doing this over a year now, and we always find new stuff, but we also repeat some of the good stuff, so appreciate that. QST, 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 this is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net, closing the net at 2,000 hours, 17 minutes, and returning the repeater to normal or abnormal use. And once again, I'd like to thank everybody out there for joining in. Appreciate all those thoughts and efforts and comments. It's what makes Tech Tuesday what it is. You're the people. KF6Q, we'll be clear and standing by.